A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. And Jesus said to his disciples, "As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. In those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark. They did not know until the flood came and carried them all away. So it will be also at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in a field, one will be taken, the other will be left. Two women will be grinding in the mill, one will be taken, and the other will be left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on which day your Lord will come. Be sure of this: if the master of the house had known the hour of night when the thief was coming, he would not have let him break into his house. He would have stayed awake. So too, you also must be prepared, for the hour you do not expect, the Son of Man will come." The Gospel of the Lord. I enjoyed this week learning more about the ark and Noah and all the animals and the people and the family and all this. It's very interesting reading. You'll find it in chapter 6, 7, and 8 in the book of Genesis. And then you'll wonder what this all means, because it shows up in our gospel reading: as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be again when the coming of the Son of Man comes to be fulfilled. So let me look at this. It's a myth. People speak about the flood and some historical catastrophe. All of that is foolishness. It was a myth, but a myth is not something untrue. A myth is something which is not historically true, but has a theological gift, a teaching in it for us. It appears in the gospel reading here. And Matthew uses it as a metaphor, an allegory, which means it can have many meanings. So let me pause over it for a few moments and wonder what this might mean to us in the manner in which we live out the season of Advent. Some of you may be familiar with Daniel Berrigan. Daniel Berrigan was an extraordinary fellow, one of two brothers priests. They were both Jesuit priests. And Daniel is the author of many, many books. But there are two books which are of interest to us when we reflect here today. They're short books. One is called "We Die Before We Live," and the other is called "Sorrow Built a Bridge." Now, Daniel Berrigan, a Jesuit priest, he decided for 5 years that he would be the chaplain to St. Rose Hospice in Manhattan. And when he finished his 5 years, then he moved to St. Vincent's Hospital in the West Village, which is a place where those who are dying of AIDS were resident. And he believed that those who are facing death, not detached to the things of the world, had a closer and deeper understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ. When they're facing death, they're not worried about material things, they're not worried about ambition, success, applause, all that is gone And now they're focused, very focused, on what the gospel of Jesus Christ means. Think about that. When people are dying, they forgive much easier. When people are dying, they bring into focus things they forgot or they put aside during the journey of life. So maybe Berrigan had something to say to us here about what we can learn from people who are facing death. I remember some years ago, it's still vivid in my memory. I got a call one night from a family. They don't belong to Holy Family and they live a distance from here. They're friends of mine and said, "Mom is dying. Would you come and see her?" So I got up, it was late at night, and I went to see the family. When I got there, the children and grandchildren were all around her bed. And she was dying. And her husband, Al, was there. We called her Willie. And she was dying. And when I got there, she said, "I want everybody to leave except Al and Monsignor." So everybody left. And I was there with her husband, Al, and Millie, and me. And she said, "Al, before I die, I want to tell you that I forgive you for any time you ever hurt me. I know you didn't mean it, but, and I want to ask you to forgive me for any time I offended you." And that old man, haltingly and with difficulty, got down on his knees next to the bed, and he took her hand, and he said, "Millie, I love you, and I ask you to forgive me for any time I offended you or neglected you. And of course, I forgive you for any failing that happened between us." It was a holy moment. And of course, all three of us were in tears. It was a sacred time. It could only happen when somebody was dying. That's what Berrigan said. That's when the richness and the power inside of us comes forth in an extraordinary and holy way. When Rollheiser reflects on this Ark of the Covenant and how it appears in this gospel in the allegory of Matthew, he says this. He says, "A world which is driven by power and wealth and success and control is a world without meaning. It's empty. No soul. There's no heart here. The world will be saved by love." In a world where we can't distinguish between truth and falsity, whatever is necessary, that's what we do, is a world without meaning. Just caught in the moment. There's no depth. The Native American Cherokee tribe people have the story of the legend of the two wolves. And the legend is framed this way for the Cherokee. The grandfather, speaking to his little boy grandson, says, "So son, you know, inside of every one of us, there are two wolves. They're in contest. One is a mean wolf, selfish, unforgiving, insensitive, arrogant, self-interested only. The other wolf is quiet, compassionate. The good wolf is generous. The good wolf is forgiving. And then the little boy says to his grandfather, "Grandpa, which wolf is willing?" And he says, "It depends on which one we feed the most. Which one we feed." There's a story told about the father who was very wealthy. And one day he called in his son. He said, "Son, I want you to do something for me. I want you to build a house. But in this house, I want everything to be perfect, top class, no second-rate material, only the best of materials in the house." He was a wealthy man. He said, "I'll give you everything you need to put the best materials in this house that I want you to build. Do you understand your mission?" The son said, "Yes, father." He went off to build the house. And as he was building the house, he put inferior material in places. "Who knows," he said, "nobody will see it. It doesn't matter." So a number of places he compromised and put in second-rate material. When he finished the house, he went back to his father. His father said, "Son, have you finished the task I asked of you?" "Yes, father," he said, "I have finished it." "Did you put in it only the finest materials? Did you compromise anywhere?" He said, "I did not compromise. I put only the finest materials in the house." He lied. And then he took the key and he handed it to his father. His father took the key and handed it back to his son. And he said, "Son, you just built your own house." So my friends, take a second look. The wolf. Which wolf is winning? And the house that you're building. What kind of a house are you building with your life, with your family? You spend Thanksgiving with your family. What kind of a house do we celebrate? Which wolf was winning?